Are these for me? I've got a comb, some lippy, and a beret. I reckon the committee have done such an incredible job. I am absolutely amazed at the attention to detail. It's not just like, you know, there's so many of you that we've got to make sure it's all organised properly, otherwise it'd just be chaos. I mean, there's that as well, but they have just gone over and above. I can't believe it. I mean, who's ever had barcodes before? Has that ever happened? Is it new? It's just incredible. And you get a coffee card if you want to buy one and get the free one at the end. I am absolutely amazed. So I think the committee have done an awesome job. I just want to say thank you to them all. But there's just one area they could actually improve on, and that is the whiteboard department. What is that? Maybe the back of an iPhone or something, I don't know. I'm going to try and draw a picture there later on. Okay, how are we all, young people? Good. I feel all this pressure because there's only one talk. I hate it when there's just one talk. Because if you do a garbage talk the first time of the weekend, you can go, oh, I was just tired for that one talk, but it'll come better in the next couple of talks. But I can't. So I brought some chewy if you answer some questions. Because I was too tight to bring anything else. But now, I look out on you and I feel it's almost this parental love for you. I was at home, Jodie and I were at home, and do you know why I've got to talk Friday night, by the way? I'll tell you why, because if Anthony gave it to me on Monday, I would have stayed all week. That's why. We're at home, and I just kept saying, Jodie, I cannot wait to get there and to be with everybody. And I had this warm, funny feeling about Todd being down here. How good... Does everyone know Todd?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to tease him or anything tonight. Too much. Is he? Where is he? Yeah, okay. He's going to be really embarrassed because I'm in one of those moods tonight. I don't know why. But the way I felt at home about him being here, just so excited. Because I grew up here going to study weeks like you guys as well, and I just absolutely loved it. And I felt so good about he now experiencing that same thing. And I get down here and see you. I'm starting to turn all soppy, I know. I feel like, oh, just hold the tears back. I cry, I laugh at all those speakers. I always do the cry thing. But I'm so happy to see you guys engaging and talking and just for a whole week around the Word of God like this. It is just so heartening. I love it. I love it. Love you too, Tobe. It's excellent. It's so good. James. What's been the best point about James for you guys?
4:17.
Oh, yeah, I know that one. What's that? Yeah, okay. Who was I talking to? Where's the young Carol girl? Where's her? Put her hand up. I'm not sure. There's a few here. She knows. Yeah, there she is. We were just talking about that, weren't we? That's your favourite too. Well, it is now. And what about it?
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean, what do I mean? I mean, why is it favourite to you? Why did it sort of hit home for you?
Well, because often I find I just go to like study week or a Hebron or whatever and you read all the stuff and you're like, that's cool, and then you can go away and not do it.
Yeah.
Whereas that says, you know, it's not like go to a study week, learn all this stuff, remember it, recite it,
we were talking like, you know, there's responsibility comes with knowledge. You know, I don't know if your parents have ever said this. My dad is all the time like, there's a paper there, and I just walk past like that, and dad would say, pick it up. Does your parents ever do that to you? Yeah. Don't just walk past it. And what would you say to that request every time? It's not mine, I don't do it. For that verse, it deletes that. You can't have that objection anymore. Because that's your paper. You see it, you see a need, you should do it. That's incredible, that. That's a good point. What about something else? Must be heaps and heaps of points.
Tongue,
yes. It's half gone already. So who was first? The tongue, yeah. Everyone, we can all feel that. Everyone's been smitten by a backbiting tongue before and probably, you know, whiplash somebody else as well. Don't stop. Just keep going. Not all at once.
Wisdom that's from above. So two wisdoms, and it's about, it goes on in chapter 4 about submitting to God. And it's always about, the Bible's always about changing your perspective, changing the way you think, and putting God's thinking in.
Excellent. Have you found James practical? We did it, I've got to admit, we did it when I was younger, about, it was a couple of years ago, 1991 I think it was, in New Zealand. And back then, like, the truth has, it has, like, it's moved a little bit on, but back then it was more, that's a nice point, there's a good link, that's a nice point over here, this Greek word means that. And that's all good, it has its place, but there was a lot less emphasis on how it relates to us. I mean, we obviously tried, but I've just picked up the spirit this weekend, since I've got here anyway, that you guys have really felt that it is practical. And that's tremendous. It's awesome to have that. So if you've been looking at what you have to do and you're daunted by that, you're going to go home and think, I'm going to take all this enthusiasm back to my own ecclesia, back to my young people's group, and no longer turn up to the young people's group and go, oh, I hope the party's good over there. I hope that it's really exciting because I feel really down. When I get there, I hope they lift me up. You're not going to be doing that. You don't care whether it's happening over there. You're going to be the life of the party. You're going to take your enthusiasm and you're going to hit your youth group and do everything you can. Look for the things that need to be done. That's what James has done for you. You've got a lot of things to do. What I want to talk about this evening, in terms of the kingdom, is the flip side of that, so that you don't go home and think, I've got to do all this, but what about God's part of the bargain? What will he do for me? Is he working hard? Does all my work mean anything? Will it amount to something? Will God make sure that he does what he needs to do to get me to the kingdom? And that's a good question, isn't it? Like, is he doing that? And you've got to believe it too. You have to believe it. And I want to convey things to you this evening to help you really believe that. Because if you don't believe it, you'll be like the kids at school who act like they don't care. You know, the kids that sit at the back, you know, and go, oh, this is stupid, sir. What do you have to read for? You know, that sort of thing. And you, they do. And you say, like, it's okay, you won't fail. I'll help you with this. And they go, I'm not doing the exam anyway. I don't even care about it. And you know they do care. They care if they pass and the time for the exam comes around. Who's in tears crying? They are, all the time. Always whinging that they can't do it, but they're too scared to have a go because they think they're going to fail anyway. And I reckon sometimes you might feel that way. You think, I'm going to give everything, because the truth is everything. It's all or nothing. If I'm going to give absolutely 100% to God, I want to know I'm going to be in the kingdom. Is God going to do his part of the bargain? Really going to do it? And as soon as you have that doubt and not that full belief, you start to pull back. So you go away from here and you hit the ground running and you're all excited for the first couple of weeks, but after a while, you're met with objections and criticisms from older brothers and sisters at your hall, or even young people, your own peers, who's just say, oh, who cares anyway, you know? And you start to get let down yourself. What's going to keep you going? And I'm going to suggest to you this evening that it really is, and all of it is you know that God's doing as much as he can for you to make sure you're, every one of you, personally, working with you is in the kingdom. We know there's going to be a kingdom, don't we? We know it. How do we know that? I could say that, I don't know. Okay.
Because the sun rises every day.
All right. Who said that? Nah. Someone else said that the other day. That was Sam said that. That was God gave him hope too. That's pretty good. Anybody else? Why do we know there's going to be a king? Because the sun rises every day. You know, there's a God behind that.
We're alive.
We're alive. Yep.
God said it's going to happen.
How has he said?
He's promised it.
Where?
Existence.
In the Bible.
Oh,
bit of chewy for that one. Yeah, Sam. Plus, he comes from up our way.
Genesis
12 says.
About the promises made to
Andrew. Oh, yeah, of course. Sorry. Exactly. I wasn't with you on that one. That's a good one. Daniel chapter 2 for me is the most classic one. Head of gold, breast and arms of silver, belly and thighs of brass, legs of iron, feet of iron and clay. All happened. As God said, the last bit, the stone's coming. God will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. It's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. So we all understand it will happen. We all want to be there, but we need a bit of encouragement. And I ask you, what is God doing to get us to the kingdom individually? Answers, please.
Trail.
I'm old, all right? What did he say? Trial. You said trail. Trail. Okay. And this is what we're going to talk about too, the idea of trials, because trials, it's your attitude towards your trials which are going to help you along the way. What about if you were Joseph? How would you feel stuck there in an Egyptian prison? Would you think God was with you, working in your life, feverishly, using all his power to get you to the kingdom of God? Would you be thinking that way? What if you were David and you had to go out and fight Goliath because there's no other big guys in Israel who are willing to pick it up and do it? What if you were Paul, you know, and you get shipwrecked on one of your missionary journeys? You think, what is going on? We've all got to go through a myriad, various different circumstances, millions of them. And yet God is tailor-made every single one of your circumstances for you, best fitting for you, your circumstances, your personality, your character, to make sure he gets you to the kingdom. Now, what we want to talk about tonight is, do you believe that? And is it true? Does he know what he's doing? Because you might be thinking to yourself, yeah, but my life's a bit bleak, Matt. And does God really know how to steer this thing? Or does he really know what I'm suffering and what I need and how to get me to the kingdom? I mean, I know it's all right for them, that person over there. Everything seems to go perfectly for them. Hands up if any of you have got a problem here. Has anyone got a problem? I'm not Dr. Phil, I'm just saying, okay? All right, so everyone's got a problem. Well, not everyone. I reckon you guys that didn't stick your hand up then were really, really weak. Yeah, thanks, Tim. I was only joking. Don't get upset with me. But everybody's got problems, haven't they? And everybody feels like their burdens and their issues are so much more than everybody else's. How do we know that God has got it covered? We want to have a look at Isaiah. Isaiah, the context that we read from today, tonight, is it's this new series that Isaiah has just started to write about called The Servant Songs. And they range from Isaiah 41 through to about 49. To 53, actually. And they're called the servant prophecies. The context physically in Isaiah's day was if you climbed out of bed and you looked out your bedroom window over the walls of Jerusalem, do you know what was outside? There were 185,000 men armed to the teeth with sword and shield, rattling every single morning, bent and twisted on your destruction. That's what was waiting outside your city. Now imagine waking up to that. This is the context in which Isaiah was writing. And to make it, has anyone ever been to the British Museum? There's three of these clay tablets around called Sennacherib's Prism, Taylor's Prism. There's another one in Jerusalem in their university there, or in their museum there. But it actually gives credence to this historical account. And it's from the Assyrians' point of view. And they say, at this time, when they were like the lords of the earth, that behind them lay in ruins, desolate, 46 fenced cities, just absolutely wiped away. And that's not including all the hundreds of other little tiny villages and locations that were just smashed on the way down. Isaiah 8 says that the Assyrian flood came right up to the neck so that Israel, Jerusalem was surrounded and there was no way to get out. The poet, Lord Byron, he says that the Assyrian came down like a wolf from the fold. And even Rabshakeh, who stood outside the commander of the Assyrian army, and he stood on the Virgin's Fountain. Oh, I love the way he does that. That's another story. But he talks in the language of the Jews on the wall, and he says, the statistics are against you. You've got no hope. Our gods are the bomb. Your gods are nothing. Where are the gods of the Samaritans? Where are those towns? They chose the wrong gods. Do you think your God can stand against us? You've got no hope at all. And the people were absolutely terrified and fearful, and there was no way out, absolutely no way out at all. It was impossible. They were gone, absolutely gone. Isaiah writes these servant prophecies at that time. That's the context. Now think about this. You're not escaping, all right? You're going to die. And Isaiah says this. Have a look at Isaiah 41, verse 8. But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend. The seed of Abraham. Who's the seed of Abraham? That's right, it's us. Jews first, but it's us. We're going to apply these words to us. Because I don't know for you who didn't put your hands up, but I bet that your problems feel sometimes. I've got problems. I don't want to bleed on you, but I've got problems. One of my problems is, I'll let you know at the moment, I don't want any sympathy or anything, but, where's Todd? No, he's not really my problem. One of my problems is, I'm a teacher, right? And I just cannot get a permanent job in the public system. And you're thinking, well, that's a blessing, merciful. But that's one of my problems. And my problem you think it's nothing. But to me, it's something. Your problems to you are massive. They might seem like the 185,000 Assyrians outside the walls of your life beating in on you. And to you, it's a big problem. This is to you, the seed of Abraham. And God says here, you who I took from the ends of the earth and called from its farthest corners, saying to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you. I've chosen you. Have you ever thought about that? That God's chosen you, young people? Who's the biggest loser in this meeting? Hands up. Who's the biggest loser? All right, Mike. Yeah? Okay, it's Mike. Biggest loser, I'll use him as the example. So you're back at school and you know you're going to have basketball and PDHPE and the teacher says, okay, he chooses the two biggest guys to be captains. because they're just like, run at me. They're the big tough guys. And they in turn then choose the teams for their athletic ability and the skill, and because they're mates and it's his girlfriend over there. And ultimately, everybody gets chosen onto the team. And then finally, the teacher says, well, I can't play until someone chooses Mike. And so the big, it's sad, isn't it? Like, are you the one that always gets left behind? Always some, like, loser just gets left behind there. Mike. It's Mike. And the big kid kicks the dirt and says, okay, we'll have Mike. It's good to be chosen. God says, I chose you. Now, what's excellent about that, young people, is, first of all, you're pretty unlovable. And you may not have even wanted to be chosen in the first place. And when you look at it, you can't see the depth of the point. Like, you can't see the love of it all just by looking at the choosee, you guys. Because we're all improbable choices, aren't we? We really, all of us are improbable choices. If you were God, would you choose me if you were God? No, I wouldn't choose me either, but if you think that about me, imagine how much I think that about you. You'd be a perfect choice. I mean, look at the lot, look at yours. This would be a perfect choice if this were a zoo. That's what I think. Not you, Jared. I'd choose you. You'd be number one. But it's different from the Greek and Roman gods. And I want to couch in this context. Think about it like this. This is different because the Greek and the Roman gods, the representation that man had of them was that they're all lounging around up in heaven or Olympus, wherever they were, and they're all bored and got nothing to do, just eating grapes. Poseidon's sick of making great big storms and sinking all the ships and things. And if you're on the ground as a person, you chose your God. You did. Because you needed your crops to grow. Or you might have been going on a long voyage and you needed to secure your safety. Or you wanted a child, so you'd pray to the God of fertility or something like that. Or you're going out to war and you needed to win the battle and you'd make a great... What you had to do was make a huge sacrifice in some way or perform some amazing feat, like climb a big hill or swim across some massive ocean, swim the Pacific Ocean, so the gods would be going, oh, look down there. There's a human being that is trying to get my attention. And they believe this. So you'd choose your God, the God that would make your crops grow, and you'd offer this really elaborate, expensive sacrifice, and the God would bless you and cause your crops to grow. And you'd be really happy about that. But then you know what you'd have to do? You'd have to keep pouring it on, doing more amazing feats, offer huge sacrifices to keep his attention up, because the vacillating gods of the Greeks and the Romans, they were easily bored. And to maintain their blessing and favour, you had to just keep on going. But our God's not like that, young people. He chose you. You didn't choose him. In fact, just have a look at this over here in Isaiah chapter 41 and verse 24, when through this section God says, if any of your gods can do anything, let me know, and I'll acknowledge them. Verse 24 says, behold, you're nothing, and your work is less than nothing, and an abomination is he who chooses you. So even when we get the opportunity to choose, because we like it to be an independent, observation of our own, when we get the opportunity, we make the wrong choice, and we choose the wrong God. God says, no, that's not how it is. See, we think it's like this, that we're walking down the street and our life's not right. I've got problems. My parents don't love me. The kids don't love me. The ecclesia's bad. All these things. And we think, hey, I see God over there. That God. I'll choose him. He'll make my life better. He'll fix me up. He'll make my life the way I want it to be. Always have wanted it to be. That's not the way it was, young people. The way it was this. You were walking down the street and God saw you And he said, I choose him. I choose her. I'll take her. I got a place for you. I got a place where I can put you. I'll look after you, and I'm going to get you to the kingdom. See, God chose us, young people, and that's made all the difference. All the difference for me. When I was unlovable, I didn't even want to be chosen, and I haven't done a single thing to get him interested in my life. And he chose me. Now, I said this to young people at home because I know you can get rather cynical, and they said, yeah, but, you know, any monkey could have chosen me anyway. How do I know he's going to look after me? And I sort of think, well, I could see the likeness anyhow, but but the point was, I take it. I take the point. So what if he's chosen you? That's only like first base. Has he got the credentials? Can I trust him? Does he know what he's doing still? Well, look what he says now. Isaiah says, not only have I chosen you, and I'm not cast you off, I'm not going to get home and think, oh, what'd I buy that for? I want my money back. It's defective. He knows each of us. And then he says in verse 10, fear not. Fear not. What's outside the walls? How big are your problems, young people? How big are they? Are they huge? 185,000 Assyrians are outside your walls. Your problems are huge, and God just goes, don't worry, I've got it covered. And you know when you've got a, you know when you've got a problem in your life and someone walks up to you who knows nothing about it and tritely says, oh, don't worry? You've had people say that to you? It reminds me of, remember Dothan, when Elisha was there? The servant wakes up in the morning and he looks out and all the Syrians are surrounding the city. And he goes, oh no, we're going to die. Look, Elisha, look at this. And Elisha says, don't fear. There's more with us than there are with them. He goes, what? Oh, I'll do that again. Elisha, look at all the Syrians, we're going to die. And Elisha goes, don't fear. There's more with us than there are with them. And I'm thinking like you are, when people say that to you, don't worry about it, it'll be okay. Did you hit your head? Like, do I know you? Elisha, did you get out of bed this morning? Have a look over there. Look at what the problem is in my life. Don't you understand? And so Elisha goes, oh, Lord, open their eyes. And he opened the servant's eyes and he saw all those fiery chariots all around. And you think about that and you go, whoa, I feel sorry for the Syrians now. Young people, 185,000 problems in your life, and exactly what we have all around us is exactly the same. God's fiery chariots, and he's looking after us. What, am I the only one that can see him? They're here. You've got to believe that. That's not a trite answer. But he gives us more than that to believe him, by the way. He doesn't expect you just to go, as he pats you on the head and says, don't fear. Because you want to back it up with some credentials, don't you? God does it. Look at this. What he says now is exciting. He says here, don't fear, verse 10, because I'm with you. Don't be dismayed, for I am your God. I am with you. I am your God. Does yours say that? I'm reading out the ESV. Do you know, if you just go back to Exodus chapter 3, I hope you're taking notes, think about this. That there is part of the name of our Father. You know God, Yahweh, I will be who I will be. A very present and immediate source of comfort that fulfills the name of God is that he will be our God now and he will be with us now to save us now. I know and you know that he will be who he will be is a prophecy of the future, that one day this whole earth will be filled with people, you and I, just like him. But it's also essentially an immediate source of comfort. And when God chose Moses and said, Moses, I want you to go over into Egypt and bring out my people Israel, Moses said, okay, I'll do that. Yeah, hold on. When I get there and they say, who sent me? What am I going to say? Now look at this. Those two things. I am with you and I will be your God. And the purpose of that is he's with you and he's our God to save you, young people. To really save you. And God says this to Moses in Exodus 3. Look, because he says in verse 12, I will be with you. Same ideas. And I've sent you. And Moses says, well, what am I going to say? And God says, well, verse 13, say this to them. The God of your fathers has sent me. And if they ask, what is his name? What am I going to say to them? Verse 14, God said, I am who I am, or I will be who I will be. And he says, also say this to them. I will be has sent me to you. And God says, also say this to them as well. That he will be who he will be, or Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me. And verse 18, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews. So right there, he says, I'll be with you and I'll be your God. And tell them, now you know how hard it was to get Israel to believe anything, okay? He said, if you tell them this, no worries at all. Tell them I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Moses stopped arguing. And when he got to Israel, and he said to the elders, and the elders said, who sent you anyway? You know, when Moses said this, it says in chapter 4 and verse 31, as soon as the people heard it, they believed. So I'm going to ask you, young people, in that little answer, I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. How did that convey a source of power and strength to all of Israel? That they went, whoa, he's got Pharaoh covered now. If it's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he can handle Pharaoh. Israel believed, the elders believed, the people believed. Do you believe it? What does it mean? Well, let's think about the lives of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. What do we know about their lives? Tell me some of the things Abraham went through.
He left everything.
He left everything, yeah. I'm talking about more of, yeah, well, that's true, actually. He left everything, and people would have looked at him and said, you're an idiot. Where are you going? No, that's actually true. What other massive, impossible, crazy circumstances did Abraham actually meet in his life where you'd look at him and you thought, you've got absolutely no hope at all? He's in Egypt. How's he going to get out of Egypt? Should he have been put to death in Egypt? He should never have got out of there alive. How come he got out of there alive? Because I am with you. I was with him. I was his God. All Israel knew that in their history. What about when he had this bright idea, oh, Lot's been taken captive. Not that Lot deserved it anyway, but he's been taken captive and there's this huge army, this northern confederacy which has come down. I know what I'll do. I'll take 318 guys with me and we'll trot off after them. How did he win that? I mean, if you're hearing this, you're going like, you didn't do that. I did do it. How did you do it? Abraham would have said, I did it because my God was with me and he is my God. And what we learn from the fathers, and Israel knew it, is that God negotiated their lives through the most impossible situations. Young people, through situations you would not even be able to comprehend, they should have been dead at every step along the way. Israel should have been dead at every step along the way, and yet their whole national deliverance is always punctuated with, I will do this and I will do that. It's God's name. He's promised, I will be with you. When Isaac lied about his wife, who saved him from Abimelech? God did. Who saved Jacob from Laban? And who saved Jacob from Esau? When they both should have been dead. Do you see the point? It's that God that says, young people, don't fear. Don't fear. It's okay. The phrase fear not, I think it appears like over 360 times. It's almost like there's one for every day of the year. Don't fear, because that's the God that's with you. Not any God that you've chosen, that God. He's chosen you, and he's got the runs on the board. He knows what he's doing. I just want you now, I want you to turn to the person who's sitting beside you right now and look at them and mean it and say to them, don't fear, God's with you. Now say it. Out of control. Out of control. So we're in the car, right? We're way out back. You're all in the car with me. You're in the back seat. So we're going like just cruising, you know, probably 4 hours west of Moree, if there is such a place. And we're just cruising through, and the car goes and then cars do that, Toby. And then it breaks down. I'm driving. Now, I don't know if you know anything about me, but I'm not even mechanically minded at all. Like, I can't even start my stupid ride on. But imagine if I got out and said, hey, don't worry, I got it covered. Pop the bonnet. I was going to say boot then. Pop the bonnet and pull it out. What's this thing? It's a dipstick. Dipstick. So you don't think, oh, well, Matt's got it covered. No worries, everybody. Matt will handle it. But who is the mechanic here, by the way? Who actually knows stuff about cars? Say if one of those guys, who is it? Really? You serious, Josh? Josh, is it?
Yeah.
You do. What's your name? What's your name? Emily, we've got a flat tyre. Emily stops and it says, don't worry, I've got it under control. Puts the jack under the car, jacks it up, mate, zoom, 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 off it comes, puts the new tyre on. Everything's, she's capable. Somebody that knows what they're talking about says, I've got it under control, as opposed to an idiot, okay, like me. That's the difference between the gods of the world who... Everybody knows they can't save. And our God who says, but don't worry, don't fear. Young people, I know what you're going through in life. I've looked after all the patriarchs. I managed their life. See, nobody could have done that. There's no God that could have actually led them safely. And you know what? The enemy rejoices over them and thinks, oh, now they're dead and they're gone. Annihilated from the earth, and they're never going to come back again. And God says, uh-uh. Just before you cork the champagne, you think you've triumphed over my people, just know that I am the God of Abraham, and I am the God of Isaac, and I am the God of Jacob. And Christ says, do you know what that means? It means they're not even dead. As far as God's concerned, they're still living. God is the triumphant God. God is the one who can negotiate our life problems, young people. 185,000 Assyrians. And here's the other thing for us. Israel, as a nation, should they be in the land? God, he says here, look at chapter 43 of Isaiah. Quick, turn back there. I'm telling too many stories. I don't want to go over time. In chapter 43 and verse 10, he says, you're my witnesses. And they've got the flood up to the neck going, what do you mean? We're your witnesses. You're my witnesses that I can save. And you and I are both thinking, well, you better hurry up and do it. You don't know what my problems are like. And God says, not only will you be my witnesses, I'm going to wipe them out. The 185,000 of them. Israel shouldn't be in the land. They shouldn't be speaking Hebrew. They should never have had Jerusalem ever again as their capital. And yet they do. It's a miracle. How come? Because God's with them. Look what Mark Twain says. You've probably heard this quote before. There's a little bit here. He says, if statistics are right, the Jews constitute but 1% of the earth's population. He says, the Egyptian, the Babylonian, the Persian, they rose, filled the planet with sound and splendor, and then faded to dream stuff and passed away. Gone. Where's the Babylonians today? He says, they all burned out and they sit in twilight now or have vanished, but the Jew saw them all. He beat them all. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. What's the secret of his immortality? Isaiah answers the question, because I am with them and I am their God. Young people, he's with you. He is your God. That's what he's trying to say. You're studying James and you're going to get it together when you get home. You're going to go home excited. That's one good thing. But you've got to believe that God is actually keeping up his part of the bargain, and he is. It's a miracle. Nobody banked Israel. It was against all the odds. There they all are, all those nations. Nobody said Israel's going to last. They all said no. They got no chance at all. So if I put it to you this way, what does it mean for you? If God can save Abraham from Pharaoh, and if he can save Abraham from Chedorlaomer and all those men who wanted to kill him, what does that mean for you? That's it, mate. He can save you. But if he can save Isaac from Abimelech, even when Isaac didn't deserve to be saved because he told a fib, what does that mean for you? It means he can save you. And what about Jacob? If God says, this is who I am, I'm the God that says, fear not, this is me, hello. If I save Jacob from Laban, through all those 120, 70 odd years of struggle and toil that Jacob went through, and from Esau, he can save you, young people. If he can save Israel, that nation, the lowliest of all nations, which you would never choose, and they certainly didn't want to be chosen, if he can save them, he can save you, young people, through all of your struggles and all of your problems. Even if they feel like 185,000 problems to you. And look what else it goes on to say. Have a look back there in Isaiah 40, 41. Look what it goes on to say. And I'm going to try and draw this for you now. I mean, here it is, okay? Can somebody read for me verse 10, please? It says verse 10 on this mammoth whiteboard. Put up like that.
Isaiah 41 verse 10. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand.
All right. Now think about this. Here we are. Thanks for that. Here we are there. I am your God. Where does God, where is his point of view? Okay, that's a good point, actually, but I won't do it there because I'm in trouble. It means he's over us. Where else did God say in relation to us that he'll be? Where's that?
Well, it says in Isaiah 41 that he holds our right hand.
It does too. So let's put him beside us. You happy with that? He's beside us. And where else is he in relation to that verse? Because I want you to believe this, young people. I've got this picture in my margin. I still like drawing pictures in my Bible and colouring in. It's my favourite thing I like doing. That's right. He's going to uphold us, so he's under us. He's under us. And what else? There's something else that's really excellent there. How's he strengthen us? Where's that? Exactly. He's in us. Through his character, through his word. He's in us. And I like the idea, if he helps us, he comes in from all sides. I like that idea that he's just surrounding us. That's our God there. And we're going like, oh, I'm not sure. I don't know if he's got it covered. I just don't know. Can he really save me? You know the Lord Jesus Christ? Well, he's got Pharaoh under control. Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, all of Israel. You're my witnesses. I know what I'm doing. I've had 6,000 years experience of this. At least 6,000 years, young people. He says, I can save you too. Even the Lord Jesus Christ. People walked past and said, it's a root out of dry ground. It's just a tender plant. That will never survive. It's got no hope. Nah. Absolutely will never amount to anything at all. Well, young people, that is now sitting in heaven at the right hand of God for eternity. Because our God can save. And if you can save the Lord Jesus Christ through impossible, extraordinary situations, he can save us. So all your work in James, and when you take it home for yourself and your ecclesias, now means something. It now means more to you. He's doing his part of the bargain. And he says there, don't be dismayed. The word means to look about, like in fear. You look around. You know when you're asleep, well, not when you're asleep, sorry, but when you're lying in bed trying to go to sleep, you're absolutely packing death in your kid and you're looking around like that. God says, don't fear. Don't be dismayed. Don't let overwhelm creep into your life. Because I'm with you. And I'll hold you up. I'm actually going to do it. Can you imagine what it's like there? Look as he says, I'm going to hold your hand. And someone said that there. I always hold my kid's hand. I still hold Todd's hand when we cross the road now. I do. I still hold it and I look way down at him and he's looking up at me going, Daddy. And I look down and he thinks he's holding on really tight. Like this going, and he's feeling so secure because Dad's with him. You like holding hands, don't you, Toad? And he thinks it's because of his grasp and his strength. We're all holding onto God's hands as tight as we can. But it's because of the hand of our Father, young people. I'm holding his hand. I mean, he's a bit stronger than me now. But when he's little, I used to hold his hand. And he thinks he's doing all the work. I'm holding on tight. It doesn't even matter if he's holding on. I've got him. And that's the position God says you're in. You should feel consolation in that. God has got you. He ain't going to let you go. He's not ever going to let you go, young people. You've got to believe that. He'll strengthen you and he'll hold you with his hand. And because of that sense of stability and strength, you're going to have you're going to have all the energy now and the enthusiasm and the motivation to keep on going. You will if you believe it. God really wants you all in the kingdom. Israel had reason to believe. And I love this. When you think about it, 185,000 Assyrians out there, and God goes, oh, okay. All right, you go out. Just you, just one. Sends out one single angel. Just one. He doesn't have to send out 185,000 fully armed tank angels. He just sends out one angel. And the flower of the then known world, he just goes, phoom, and they're gone. Just one angel. Your problems, God's got it covered in his spare time. He'll look after your problems. Don't think for a second he won't. He absolutely knows what you're going through. So we started off, can I trust him? Does he know how to drive this thing? Yes, he does, young people. Everything you've been working towards for this week, everything that you have been studying for this week, what you in prospect want to go home and put to work in your own ecclesias, there's a reason to do it. You're not going to be caught short. You're not going to be caught with, oh, I've come so far and he's let me down. It's never going to happen like that. Never will happen at all. Accept what life dishes out to you, young people. Accept it. Take it. Accept it with joy. Be happy for it. Know full well that everything in your life is God-directed and God-designed. You may make bad choices. God can even work with that. You may have to suffer a little bit, but God can work with it. Don't look over at the next ecclesia and go, oh, but if only I was in that ecclesia over there. I mean, we were down at Punch Bowl the other weekend. My kids were in tears on the way home going, oh, I hate going home to Lismore. Why can't we stay in Sydney with the Wollstonecrofts? And I'm like, are you serious? But that's, everybody thinks if only I had those friends, not the Wollstonecrofts, I mean other friends. But if only if I was looked after by them, I was in that ecclesia. If I knew this much, if I had these circumstances, that much money, everything in my life would be fine. Young people, God knows what He is doing with your life. He knows it. And that's made all the difference to me in my life, knowing that He chose me. I'd make the wrong choice. Those nations, when they got given the opportunity, they made the wrong choice. They chose the wrong gods. They chose the gods they couldn't save. Rahab put her money on the right God. She said, I'm with you, Israel. And she made the right choice. Rarely does it happen. And besides the fact, over and above her choice, God says, I've chosen you. Now that's powerful. He's doing absolutely everything He can. All the time, young people, negotiating your life, which you think is really complex, He's got it under control. All the time, using all His character, all His power, bringing you into circumstances and experiences in your ecclesia, the people you meet when you're at work, the people you're trying to preach to, all of those things are happening to make you the best possible person you could be. Don't just accept it in faith, put up with it. Accept it with joy. Paul and Silas singing hymns when they're in the prison. Peter and John, they counted it all joy that they could suffer for Christ. Joseph said, I was in prison so that God could bring life to you. Joseph saw that. It was for your good. Some of us will suffer. Accept what God has got for you, young people, and do your work diligently, in love, in service to Him. Go home, take all the learnings that you've got out of James, take it all home, and enthusiastically get into it. Don't hold back and wait for your next friend to say, oh, I'll do it too. Just wade in there as excited as possible and really be happy about it, knowing full well that God's going to take you through all the impossible little roads and narrow crevasses in your life to get you to the kingdom, to make you the best person that you could possibly be. He's doing what we've said tonight. He's promised to do. I want to finish with Romans 8. You look at this quote. He's chosen you, young people. Stop arguing about it. Just deal with it. God loves you. That's why He chose you. He actually really, really loves you. Romans 8 says this, verse 28. These million things that are conspiring together to get you guys to the kingdom of God. You, as much as He works with a nation, He's working with you. He has the ability to work with you singularly and just you, just one. He knows what's going on. All things, verse 28, we know all things work together for good for those that love Him. All things. Now, just down here, it's qualified. I want to read this to you and just think about this and we'll finish. Just really think about it. You're going to go home at the end of this week. You're going to hit the ground running. What are you going to do? Verse 31, what are we going to say then to these things? Well, if God is for us, because we think, oh, maybe He is. Maybe. No, He is, young people. He's for you. If God's for us, who can be against us? Man, we feel sorry for them out there. Now they worship a God that can't save. All they've got is spears and shields. We've got God on our side. He didn't spare His own Son. He gave Him up for us all. How will He not also, with Him, graciously give us all things, including the kingdom? Who will bring any charge against God's elect? Because you're thinking, yeah, but you don't know what I've done, Matt. Yeah, well, who's going to bring charge against you? Not me. What about God who's justifying? God's the one who's actually looking for a reason to make you right. Who is it to condemn? Christ, who died for you? I don't think so. More than that, who was raised, who is at the right hand of God, who indeed is interceding for us. Who will separate us from the love of Christ? What about tribulation? That's pretty tough. Tribulation. No, not that either. Distress, persecution, famine. What about nakedness, danger, or sword? Because some of us are going to suffer things, young people. But you've got to settle in your minds here tonight that you know that God's doing the best he can for you personally to get you to the kingdom of God. He's not going to stop till you're with him in immortality. Verse 32. Look at all the no's in this verse, and I'll say it as it is in the Greek. No. In all things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I am sure that no death, no life, no angels, no rulers, no things present, no things to come, no powers, no height, no depth, no any